You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
It is indeed, and on the line we have Mark Delder. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. There's a lot to wade through this morning. So I'll start with the fact that there has been confirmation that the government is reviewing the free school lunches scheme, Ka Ora Ka Ako, which was introduced under Labor, and it's currently providing free healthy lunches to about a quarter of students. David Seymour has cited wasted lunches and said that there is no hard evidence that it improves attendance or achievement. That indication alone that funding will be halved has been met with a lot of pushback. What do you think that the core motivators are for this politically, if there's been that much discussion at this stage for the government to proceed with those cuts?
Yeah, I think the government is generally in a position of trying to find savings, and Seymour is the sort of education minister or associate education minister responsible for this program. He's someone who's particularly, I suppose, hostile to programs like this, which are government funding for almost anything. And so, you know, not surprising that he would want to take a good look at it. It's quite expensive. It's also something that Labour didn't leave funded for future years in their last budget. And so basically, it's an added cost for the government going forward.
Mm.
All of that contributes to this review. I would be surprised if the review led to a wholesale axing of the program.
Mm-hmm.
If there's probably some sort of compromise somewhere. I think it's just quite politically unpalatable to be chopping this. It's quite a popular policy for, you know, parents who are really that sort of core median voter that National is looking to keep, to woo over and to keep. So, yeah.
Yes, indeed. And moving on to kind of more policy, but at first I'd like to acknowledge that the 5-year anniversary of the horrific March 15th terror attacks in Christchurch is tomorrow, and we're about to discuss the Arms Act adjacent to that. So if that's triggering for anyone, we'll be on that topic for a couple of minutes. Please join us again after that. But Mark, in a similar vein, kind of regarding what policy indicates to communities about the priorities of the government, what are your reckons on the agreement between National and ACT to rewrite the Arms Act, including that changing of existing licensing scheme and reintroducing the military-style weapons that were used in those terror attacks?
Yeah, it's again, like with the school lunches, it's kind of a tough one to understand what it will actually mean on the ground, if that makes sense, or in terms of the actual policy details. Like with school lunches, you know, guns are not a popular topic for the average New Zealander. People were broadly supportive of the gun bans that came in after March 15. And indeed, National voted for them, right? It was only ACT that didn't support them. And so the compromise position is probably where we're likely to land, not with like a full return to the pre-March 15 status quo. I think with the military style semi-automatic weapons, the discussion from the minister there has been more around expanding the number of people who can access them to, you know, sport shooters and people with a particular specific need to, rather than just making them open to anyone who has a firearms license. So that's still stricter than it was before March 15, but it is a loosening of the current regime. I think one thing that maybe people haven't focused on as much is the firearms registry, which came in just last year, I believe, in terms of when it was finally completed, which requires people to register all the firearms that they legally purchase. And the hope is that over time you develop this ability to track, you know, this gun was used in a crime. It was originally legally purchased by someone at this date. You know, how did it get into the hands of criminals? Is there some sort of black market thing going on here? Was it just stolen, et cetera, et cetera? And so it's quite a useful tool. It's used widely overseas, but it's got a lot of opposition within the firearm owning community, who feel that it's sort of quite a restriction on their rights and a regulatory burden on them. They're concerned around privacy breaches. If you know, the database is breached, then that's a list for criminals of where to go to steal guns. So that's you know, not reassuring for the owners of those firearms.
Yeah.
So complicated issues there, but I think that's something that could be taken apart wholesale because it's slightly more technical and it's also slightly more recent and so easier to roll back.
Yes. And what's your kind of read on National's standing with the public with those policies and other ones in mind? It's hard to imagine that they'd bring in these discussions without some support in Aotearoa's population, but they have been hitting the headlines a lot in a particular light. What's your kind of read on that?
Yeah, I think that the government has broadly, and this isn't just National, taken the approach of you voted for us and we're just going to do what we said we would do.
Mm-hmm.
That's complicated by the fact that there are three parties in the government. Some of them are, and the government as a whole is doing things that maybe just one or two of those parties, you know, had campaigned on. But no one is really making apologies for advancing policies like that might be controversial, like fast track, like the smoke-free changes, like the school lunches or the firearms legislation we've been talking about just now. And I think that's a conscious strategy where, you know, previous governments, when they hit something controversial, they back down, they apologize, they send it to a working group or something like that. I think at least for now, with the momentum of that 100-day plan and maybe a little bit going on further, the government's just planning to push through what it can. And, you know, there's not another election for almost 3 years. They can sort out the public perception impacts closer to that. And I think this is a correct point, even if maybe a sad one. Realistically, in 3 years, we're all going to be worrying about something different and no one's going to be remembering the smoke-free changes or what happened to school lunches. And so moving fast and early now gives them, you know, the ability to get some stuff done without having to worry about political ramifications as much. And then they can maybe tread a bit more cautiously as the term goes on.
Yes. And in terms of kind of what's going on with the opposition, the Green Party has a new co-leader following James Shaw stepping down after just over 7 years in the position. Now Chloe Swarbrick has been announced as the new co-leader, of course, alongside Marama Davidson. What do you think that this means for the Green Party politically?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. Chloe is someone who is relatively well-liked both by the sort of Green Party base and I think by general voters. You know, she did win the Auckland Central electorate race in 2020 when that was not widely expected to happen, and she held it in 2023. So she's clearly got the ability to cut through beyond the base to a wider core of voters, which is really important because that was one of James Shaw's sort of strongest attributes for the Greens, was that he could speak to a wider number of voters beyond the usual base. The question is just, you know, whether Chloe can do it as well as James could, and if not, you know, what that means for the Greens' support in the polls. I don't think there's an obvious answer here. I don't think you'd find many people willing to put a large amount of money on it one way or another, certainly not in this economy. Yeah, that's, I think, the central question that I'm curious in is does she have that same cut through as James? Maybe even more, right? She's probably going to be able to reach out to younger voters who are a bit more disengaged more easily. But then again, young people don't vote very much, so that might not help in an electoral sense. It's hard to tell how it will play out, but it'll be very interesting to watch.
Interesting. Well, there is a lot going on out there, and we appreciate you helping us break some of it down. Thank you, Mark, and we'll speak to you again soon.
No worries. Thanks so much for having me.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.